This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. This is The Morning Run. I'm Uma Phagan, RPK Phagan, standing in for Sharad Kutan, who's away. You will be back to your regularly scheduled program tomorrow when he returns. The man laughing is Tan Chung Han, and it's time of the morning for Pressing Matters. And, of course, we have P. Gunasekaram joining us, independent business analyst. Guna, welcome back to the show. It's great
to have you on. Thanks.
I have to say, though, it's great to have you on, but your article on the Geely Proton deal broke my heart because the only thing I was looking forward to was cheaper car prices. And you're telling me, no, it's not going to happen?
Unless things change. I think for me, the major problem with Proton was that everybody paid much higher prices for cars, including for Proton cars.
Right? Correct.
So a similar Proton car somewhere else would have cost a lot less.
Well, if we look at prices in London, as opposed to Malaysia, even with the exchange rate, the Proton cars in London were significantly cheaper.
Yes. So, in effect, what was happening was Malaysians were subsidizing Proton. And not just that, they were paying extra tax revenue into the government's coffers. Mm. And, you know, if you just look at the number of cars which have been sold from 1985 when Proton started operations and production, then the Malaysian public may have paid as much as 350 billion ringgit more in Texas than otherwise for cars.
Wow.
That's a 1 MDB multiple of about 7 using their 50 billion ringgit in debt at its peak. Yeah. 350 billion. Wow.
Yeah. Now, that's in terms of extra duties paid for the cars. No? And so, say, even if you're to buy some cars, can be as much as one half of the price of the same car here. You know?
But, you know, one would think that given, you know, the fact that DRB Highcom has secured that foreign strategic partner for Proton, right, that, you know, these kind of turmoils will be firmly in the past. I mean, what's your outlook on Proton here?
All right. Let's just look at the prior to the deal. For instance, I think Tan Sri Said Mokhtar's company, DRB Highcom, bought a 42.7% stake in Proton from Khazanah National, government-owned company, for 1.29 billion, I believe. And that would put a valuation of about 3 billion on Proton. So but subsequent to this, which means that Proton is now completely in private hands, no more government involvement, the government has been giving 1.5 billion in soft loan to Proton and 1.1 billion in research grants. So research grants is basically a thinly disguised means of subsidy to Proton from the government. Now, all car companies undertake research and development.
Right. So it's still taxpayer money going to Proton still.
Yes. Yeah. So in spite of Proton being private, the taxpayer money was still going inside. So now I don't expect that to change with Geely coming in. So Geely is taking a 49.9% stake in Proton, which means DRB Highcom will have 51.1.
Yes.
And they actually, in the announcement, they did not disclose the exact price that Geely is paying for this 49.9% stake. But subsequently, there was an analyst briefing at which DRB Highcom gave some of the figures. And the figure is 700 million, you know, for the 49.9% stake. But what you're talking about here is only 170 million in cash. The rest of it is the right to produce the BOYU model, which Geely has, for the life cycle of the model in some selected countries in Southeast Asia. Also, not all of them are mentioned. So, effectively, Geely is getting a 49.9% stake for 170 million cash. The rest of it is a proprietary right, which they already have. So that, I think, is a pretty good deal for Geely.
Well, I was just going to say that. I mean, the Volkswagen deal back in 2007 sounded a lot better for Proton.
Yes, but Proton was in far better shape then. The bargaining power would have fallen quite a bit. So if the Volkswagen deal in 2007 had gone through, it didn't go through because former Prime Minister Mahathir, as well as former Trade and Industry Minister Rafida.
There's a lot of noise.
They reportedly lobbied very strongly against the deal going through because they wanted Proton to be a domestic company. But the Proton's model was flawed right from the start because we do not have the technological capability to undertake this project, you know, and that was shown Over the period of right of over 30 years.
And also, according to your article, you know, looks like Proton had multiple stabs at trying to find that foreign strategic partner, right? So you mentioned Volkswagen, but Daihatsu also featured, you know, on your radar. I mean, well, they did have tie-ups with, like, say, the likes of Honda and Suzuki, but not quite at the level of, you know, say, what Geely or Volkswagen or even Daihatsu were planning for, right?
Daihatsu was Perodua, right?
Daihatsu was Perodua.
Oh, Perodua. Yeah. Okay, all right. Sorry.
So
yeah.
The what happened was, I mean, Proton has been rebadging cars. In other words, the first car was Mitsubishi
Lancer,
Fury.
Right? Oh, Fury. Yes.
Fury. Mitsubishi Lancer Fury.
That's right.
So that one is essentially you get the technology from Mitsubishi. Mitsubishi was a partner in the manufacturing plant. And then you rebadge it as a Proton car. So effectively, it was Japanese. And more recently, they did it with the Honda Accord, you know. So that was rebadged as a Proton Perodana, for instance. And then I think there's the Mitsubishi Previ. I think the Mitsubishi Proton Previ is a Mitsubishi model.
Correct.
And looks like that trend is set to continue because
with China.
Yeah, because apparently, so you know, Proton's SUV is set to be known as the Proton Bayou, according to, you know, some leaked estimates, and that's based on Geely's Bayou.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bayou.
And funny enough, you know, Chong and I kind of made a joke about this. I know this is juvenile, but hey, I'm just going to say it anyways. Bayou in Hokkien means no oil, so it's like you got an SUV that's,
oh,
like,
that's
no oil.
Nice. Yeah.
Okay, very quickly, I want to mention something here that, you see, the some consider the jewel in Proton's crown to be Lotus.
I was just going
to
say that, yeah.
So,
and
Lotus,
that's what Geely wants, right?
Yes, that is what Geely, the trade and industry minister too, Ong Kachuan, said that that is what Geely wanted. So they the entire Lotus stake, which cost $1.96 billion for Proton, was sold over to Geely and a company called Etika Automotive, which is not owned by Proton, but which is owned by Syed Mukta and his wife. Mm-hmm. So Proton does not even benefit from an upturn in Lotus, which has got real a good brand and it's got technology.
And
in
good
terms
technology,
of,
yeah.
But, I mean, that's just a sign of the times, right? You know, the fact that Proton had basically had to cut losses. I mean, let's just put it that way, right? You know, they basically were just bleeding, or not just that they want money, their DRB high comps.
But why couldn't, say, Proton have held on to the 49% stake in Lotus,
correct,
instead of giving it over to its to DRB Highcom's major shareholder, Syed Mukta? But, so Syed Mukta actually benefits from any kind of upside if Geely manages to turn Lotus around.
And before we go to a break, very quickly, Geely does have a good track record, of course, of turning companies around. They did well with Volvo.
Yes, yes.
Well,
right.
But then on the flip side, though, while they did well with Volvo, but their investment in the London taxi cabs, those are still bleeding money, though. So, So right. The verdict is still up there. No? With
suppose Proton, you win some, you lose some in this game.
Well, this is a story we're definitely going to be paying close attention to. Proton, of course, is very close to our hearts, a lot like MAS is. After this, we're going to be talking about the Star and that show Cause Letter. More pressing matters in just a little bit. This is The Morning Run on BFM 89.9. Good morning. You're back on The Morning Run. It's Pressing Matters. Han and Uma with you. Joining us, of course, independent business analyst P. Gunasegaram, and we're going to be talking about the Star and that show cause letter that was issued to them by the Home Ministry after their front page last Saturday, Saturday before last, on the first day of Ramadan. There was a story about a Malaysian terrorist cell leader, followed by a large picture of people sembahyang tarawih, which is something they do every year on the first day of Ramadan. Of course, this got some people rather angry, and what it essentially led to a huge hue and cry on both social media and from the government as well. So, Gunnar, before I get your thoughts on this, because, you know, Rehman Rashid just passed away recently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there was something he always used to tell me when he was my boss. And he always said that a newspaper is a document that requires intellectual consideration. It's not something that you look upon from afar. It's something that you have to read up close, right? And read all the minute details, from the headlines to the stanfers to the pictures to the captions. All of that was important. Now, when I look at the Star up close, like how I'm supposed to read it at breakfast, I don't see any offense because it's very clear. But of course, if I look at it from afar, I can see how someone would have misinterpreted that headline and photo. But a newspaper is not meant to be looked upon from afar.
Yeah, okay. The headline says, Malaysian terrorist leader, you know, mm-hmm. But the picture below that, was clearly captioned saying that this is a group of people who are praying at the Putrajaya Mosque.
Yeah, right? First day of fasting begins.
Yeah, first day of fasting begins. So what would have faced, say, perhaps the page editor for that day is okay, you have this big news here where in the Philippines there is a Malaysian terrorist leader. And then, of course, we always put up, you know, a beginning of Ramadan picture on the star. So what you do in this case, you to highlight the main news story, you put your headline up there, and then you clearly make a reference to an inside page. Mm. And then there is a picture below that. In fact, I think the Utusan as well as the NSD displayed similar kind of headings and pictures. But the only difference was that they had a heading for the picture as well. You know? Whereas in the Star, there was a caption but no heading for the picture. Mm. So if they had put a heading, then they would probably have got away with it. So I think the question is, do people really get offended by this?
Yes.
Or is it a sort of like, as one columnist in Malaysia, Kini, said, is it manufactured outrage, you know, as far as this is concerned?
Yeah, I mean, Piers, in my conversations, you know, with some, or actually quite a few, who have expressed their outrage, you know, on social media, and in my conversations with them and trying to understand, you know, where this outrage comes from, I mean, okay, so at the surface level, it essentially is this, you know, the fact that, at least according to them, you know, because we have been conditioned, right, to constantly associate their front page picture with the headline, right? You know, that's pretty much the status quo day in, day out. You see the front picture, you see the headline. And Uma, as you spoke about, it's meant to attract you to go from, you know, seeing it from afar.
To up close.
Get your attention, then go in closer, right? But it appears that, you know, given the kind of reaction that we're seeing, you know, those who feel aggrieved by it are not making that leap. They still want to remain from afar, so to speak, and choose that offense, right?
I think if you look at newspaper headlines, they have changed. They have changed very considerably. So the headline is different from the picture.
Yes.
A lot of publications around the world use a large picture, and then they have a heading of a story which is not related to the headline at all. You know, so even the Star has been doing that, I think, for many months now.
So now, given the kind of reaction that we have seen from, or the decisions that have been made by the management of the Star, we understand two top editors have been suspended.
Correct.
Is that correct? Yeah.
Yes.
And they've got the deadline that's due today for their response. Now, do we know anything about the response from the Star yet besides their public apology?
No, they will not make the response public, but okay. I think they will give all the reasons why this was done. I think that is the normal procedure. But the thing is, you see, when you have the Printing Presses and Publications Act, which basically puts the power in the Home Affairs Ministry to suspend or revoke your license at any time, what choice do you have but to apologize? Mm. You know, so you have to go through the whole routine of making yourself look terribly contrite and that you are very sorry for your offense. If you say, look, I did no wrong, then that's not going to cut it with the Ministry of Home Affairs. It's not whether you think you're right or not. It's whether the Ministry of Home Affairs thinks whether you're right or not.
And I think, you know, on one level, that's somewhat acceptable given the scenario we live in. Mm. And then we push it to the next level, right, which is starting to investigate people under the Criminal Act and sedition. I mean, that's taking it one step too far, isn't it?
Okay, I mean, all right. I mean, if you didn't have the Printing Presses and Publications Act, okay, then what happens is the investigations will start. And if the police think that there is a case, then they will recommend prosecution. So then the prosecution will take place and the Star in this case will face court action. And then they can defend themselves. So that would be the better procedure instead of a very draconian piece of legislation like the Printing Presses and Publication Acts, which basically solely puts the power for revocation or granting of a license in the hands of the Home Minister, effectively. You know? Mm. So recall that the Edge, for instance, was suspended for 3 months for its coverage of 1 MDB. Right. You know, and strangely, some of the reasons were stated is with raising public concern and those kind of things.
They kind of shrouded under the national security issue.
So how could you equate it with, say, reporting fairly on 1 MDB? You know? Right. So if they have done it unfairly, use the law against them, not the Printing Presses and Publications Act, which...
And now, let me just preface my next question by making this very big disclaimer here. I want everyone to know that my heart certainly goes out to the folks at the Star. You know, I believe there was no intent to cause this kind of outrage. You know, but you know, at the same time, I want to maybe explore this idea because, Uma, you worked in print before, and Guna, I believe you have as well. Yeah. So, no, given that media outlets, you know, operate very much in the sphere of public opinion, right? Could this have been avoided? Because Uma, you mentioned this, right? Because the print medium, you know, involves a lot more thought. So by that same token, shouldn't more thought and more care have been given into the outlay of the front page? Or are they totally absolved from, you know, any kind of blame here?
Well, before we get to Gunnar, I agree with that. I mean, sure. I mean, you're allowed to think it's wrong. You're allowed to think it's stupid or silly. My problem is it's not criminal. It's not seditious. Mm. I think when we push it to that level, criticize the Star by all means, you know, maybe put a thicker border, increase the font size for where it said first day of prayer start. All of that's a design decision. Mm. But sedition? I don't think there was any intent.
Yeah, certainly there was no intent in
this case. We can safely agree, you know, that there is no intent there. No, but I think also at the along those same lines, you know, is this very much, you know, really up to the court of public opinion now? I mean, okay, I know the government is involved, but are they reactionary?
I think the government, because it has become such a huge issue, they are not likely to back down and say, look, you know, but. They want the Star to appear in public, at least to be contrite. So eventually this will blow over. But, you know, I mean, this is not the first time that the Star has been given show cause letters. You know, there have been at least four other times before. No? And it was also suspended for a period of time along with some other newspapers. Operation Lalang in 1987.
That's right. Gunnar, thank you so much once again for joining us this morning on Pressing Matters. We're wrapping up the morning run. Sharad Kutan will be back with you tomorrow. And you will hear me on the evening edition as usual. We've got Velocity Girl Primal Scream coming your way on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.